Good afternoon. May it please the court. Alan Epstein, representing Redtail Mountain Ranches. With me at council table is Michael Beatty. The issues Redtail presents on appeal relate to the trial court's improper award to plaintiff of additional profits and commissions under the party's development and marketing agreement. Redtail also argues that the court erred in compelling Redtail to select four lots and precluding it from selling those lots to third parties. First, Redtail submits the court erred in awarding plaintiff an additional $622,000 after he had already taken a distribution of $284,000, which was more than the 20% profit earnings distribution to which he was entitled under the agreement. This issue turns on a misinterpretation of the net profit figure on Redtail's profit and loss summary. Basically, the court treated the $3.5 million net profit figure, which the court adjusted up to $3.7 million, as if Redtail had earned that amount from the sale of lot to third parties. But the profit and loss summary reflected that $2.4 million of that amount was work in progress, representing the cost of the remaining unsold lots. Paragraph 5 of the agreement provides for distribution from net proceeds from the sale of parcels. The $2.4 million representing the cost of unsold lots is not, by definition, net proceeds from the sale of parcels. Therefore, the trial court erred as a matter of law in awarding plaintiff an additional profits based on a calculation that included the $2.4 million as if it was.
Mr. Epstein, let's talk just briefly about the $284 figure. At trial, Redtail's counsel, and I don't recall if you were trial counsel, but Redtail's counsel asked the plaintiff if the $284,000 figure went to him from two closings, and he responded, I don't have a statement, but it sounds right. Why shouldn't we construe his response as an admission that he'd already gotten the $284,000?
You should.
Okay. But I guess I have a related question, which is, can you tell us where in the record it shows us how the trial court treated the $284,000 or whether it even accounted for it?
The court did not account for the $284,000. A fallback argument Redtail advances is that if plaintiff was to receive anything in addition to the $284,000 that he took, that the trial court erred as a matter of law in not reducing that $622,000 figure by the $284,000 figure, because plaintiff's counsel in closing argument judicially admitted that $284,000, quote, has to be subtracted off the monies we requested because it was a net profit distribution, it rightfully should be subtracted. But our primary argument is that this court need not go there because the trial court should not have awarded plaintiff any additional profit at all, because the $284,000 represented about 26% of the proceeds from the sale of lots that was distributable based on the profit and loss summary. And even if you adjust that $3.5 million figure up to the $3.7 million figure that the trial court recalculated, that $284,000 is still 22% of the net proceeds from the sale of parcels. So plaintiff was overcompensated even before the trial court awarded him another $622,000, plaintiff took lot 21, which we're not arguing was improper.
But your client stipulated to the profit and loss summary, right?
We stipulated that the profit and loss summary was accurate. We did not stipulate that net profit meant net proceeds from the sale of parcels. And that's what the marketing agreement provides for.
Well, can you explain to me, Mr. Epstein, please, how you are viewing net proceeds as being a larger figure than net profits? Normally, it's the other way around. Normally, you have net proceeds, and then you have deductions from net proceeds, and then you get to net profits. That's my understanding of financial terminology. I looked some stuff up before argument. It comports with what my understanding was. I'm having trouble understanding why you would say that net proceeds is a subset of net profit.
The net profit figure on this document, if you includes profit that is representative of net proceeds from the sale of lots after deducting losses. But included in that $3.5 million figure is $2.4 million, which is not, it is not earned profit from the sale of lots because it's unsold lots. It's the cost of the unsold lots. So the big figure.
Why did you stipulate to that as the net profits then? I'm having trouble understanding why you're not bound by the stipulation.
Well, we're not arguing that we're not bound by the stipulation.
Or and why it isn't binding in terms
because
of determining.
Net profit is not the same thing as net proceeds from the sale of lots, and the agreement provides for the parties to receive, to only receive net proceeds from the sale of lots, not net profit.
But why would.
Or earned profit. Another provision says earned profit. The $3.5 million is also not earned profit because of that $3.5 million, $2.4 million of it is the cost of the unsold lots, which by definition is not earned profit. So we stipulated that it was net profits, but the definition of net profits isn't contained. It's not defined in the agreement.
Mr. Epstein, I think that's where I'm getting confused. It seems to be some commingling of the terms profits, and net proceeds. And if you could just straighten out what each of those terms mean.
Well, the term net profits doesn't occur in the agreement.
Right.
What the agreement provides for under paragraph 5 is that the parties receive distributions from the sale of parcels. Owner gets 80%, broker gets 20%. That's what the agreement provided for. The agreement does not define the term net profit. The profit and loss summary refers to the term net profit, but inclusive in that term net profit is $2.4 million in the cost of the unsold lots. So we stipulated that the profit and loss summary was accurate, and that net profit figure was a minimum, but the term net profit is included under that summary, $2.4 million in unsold lots, which by definition is not something that is distributed to the parties 80-20 pari passu and is not earned profit.
Let me see if I can ask you this question. In the stipulation, what was the net profit supposed to be of? Net profit for what?
I don't think the stipulation goes beyond that. It's just the party stipulated that the profit and loss summary reflected a minimum net profit.
Of what?
Of Redtail. It is a net profit figure. The bottom line
of Redtail's financials or
yes. On page 2, the bottom line figure says, page 2 of the profit and loss summary, the bottom line figure of $3.5 million is defined as net profit. Of that $3.5 million figure, right above the items that states total cost of sales, $6.4 million, is a $2.4 million figure in parentheses. That's work in progress, which at trial was testified to mean the cost of the unsold lots. So inclusive in the net profit, it's not a loss, but it isn't net proceeds from the sale, or proceeds from the sale of parcels, which is what the parties are entitled to.
So you're saying
entitled to net profit.
So you're saying what was stipulated to is different from the distribution that's referred to in paragraph 5?
Yes.
Okay.
This is confusing.
Beware of stipulations.
Assuming that the court should have awarded any additional profit, the $284,000 figure to which Judge Fox was referring it should be deducted from that $622,000 because it was profit that plaintiff took. And plaintiff's counsel stipulated that it rightfully should be subtracted. Additionally, the trial court added to the net profit figure of $196,000 in state income tax Redtail owed and paid, but that was Redtail's state tax liability, not Redtail's principals, who are Florida residents. Plaintiff's argument that this $196,000 was a state tax liability to Redtail's principals is not supported by any evidence in the record. The fact that plaintiff had to pay state income tax on the sale of parcel 21 is irrelevant because he is a Colorado resident.
But Mr. Epstein, can you help me out with a citation to the record? Because I've really had a hard time following that piece of it. Where in the record was there evidence that indicated whose liability this was, whether this was a personal liability or a corporate liability?
It is on the profit and loss summary, I believe, and in the trial courts, yeah, real estate property taxes under other expenses, and the court added, the trial court in its order added it back in as if it was profit when in fact it was a tax liability.
Well, does it say on the profit and loss statement whether that's a personal liability or a corporate liability?
It's by definition a corporate liability because it's other expenses of the corporation, and the trial court really didn't have any basis of attributing it instead to Redtail's principals because they're not Colorado residents.
And why do we think the trial court attributed to the individuals?
I don't know. I don't think that was explained in the order.
I mean, what is it about the order that makes you think that it was attributed to the individual?
Because he added it to their liability.
He added it to the individual's liability.
No, he added it to Redtail's.
But he didn't, my recollection of the order is he didn't say why he was adding it back in. He didn't say he added it back in because it was a personal liability as opposed to a corporate liability. Am I right about that? Okay.
Yeah. So, and then Redtail filed a post-trial motion explaining why it shouldn't have been, but the court just denied the motion.
Okay. So I'm having trouble following your reasoning because I'm not seeing anything in the court's order that indicated that the court did it because it was a personal liability. So I'm not sure I follow your argument that
there may have been some testimony on it, but it makes no sense unless that's what the court was doing because it belonged on the other expense column of the profit and loss summary, and there was no reason that the trial court should have transferred it as if it was not a corporate liability. With respect to commissions, I'll just briefly say that paragraph 6C and paragraph 6A have apparently conflicting language. The trial court's invocation or application of 6A invalidated 6B, and 6B should have been applied instead because parcel 3, a preferred parcel, had been sold, so the trial court should have permitted Redtail to continue marketing the unsold lots rather than compelling them it to take four of those lots and then paying plaintiff a commission on those lots. And with 1.5 seconds left, I will.
I do have a question, counsel, and because I want to make sure I understand this. Was there any testimony that indicated at trial that any of the monies that are reflected on the profit and loss statement could have come from anything other than the sale of the lots?
I don't believe so.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Bobby Duthie. My registration number is 12250. I was trial counsel in this case for Jeff Schlitkin and also the appellate counsel here. I think I could straighten out some of the confusion that arose on the questions that each of you asked to Mr. Epstein. Let me start by saying everything was fine until 2006. It could have been a handshake. 2007, the market down in Durango kind of dropped. There weren't a lot of sales, and so things changed a little bit because Mr. Myers was from Florida. Mr. Schlitkin had done the entire development himself, and in this project, he was relying, because in the original formation, although it was stipulated to the validity of the contract of the developing marketing agreement, what happened was that agreement was a binding agreement between the parties, and then in 2007, he got concerned with Mr. Myers, and there was trial testimony about that. There was trial testimony about how things started to go awry and how he would not give Mr. Schlitkin an accounting. And so by not getting an accounting, he got concerned of the trust, whether or not he was going to get his 20% profit from the contract. That kind of led to, in 2009, exhibit number 6, which is the thing that we've been talking about here, the profit and loss statement. That wasn't produced until 2009. That's what the subject of the stipulation was. The reason it's confusing is just like the development and marketing agreement, it was prepared by Redtail. So this agreement, the trial court found very inaccurate, found lots of inaccuracies, lots of exaggerations, lots of title incorrections on the profit and loss statement. So going to your question, was it corporate or was it individual liability? We don't know. Redtail controlled the accounting. Redtail never shared any of the accounting information with Jeff Schlitkin. It became clear from the start of the trial through the remainder of the trial that positions changed depending on what Mr. Myers or Redtail wanted from the contract. And let me give you a good example.
Let me just ask you the same question I just asked Mr. Epstein, and that is, was there anything in the record that indicated that any of those profits could have come from anything other than the sale of lots?
There was a little bit of testimony by Mr. Myers where he said on this 2.4 that Mr. Epstein is talking about coming in the trial transcript, and I think I'll find the page and the site for you, but in there, he talked about other accounts or other assets paying or other notes being paid. And in fact, let me find it for you. Trial transcript volume 1, I think it's page 129. I asked him, how do you hide it? In other words, looking at this profit and loss statement, how he's hidden a lot of the incomes or exaggerated a lot of those things. He answered, I don't understand. I said, I don't understand. And Mr. Meyer stated, I didn't say we hid it. I said we probably had assets that were waiting to collect. Notes, I don't really know. So essentially, to your question, Judge Terry, he didn't know. He didn't know how this exhibit, this profit and loss statement that was stipulated to, was done by the internal accountant. And what's most important about the profit and loss statement is on the third page of that exhibit, this is a thing prepared by Redtail to give to Mr. Schlitkin so he can understand what his net profits are due under Redtail.
And how do we know that? Is there something in the record that tells us that?
Yes, this was stipulated to in the joint trial management order, but also the Exhibit 6 was admitted, and on page 3, it says total due to broker, which is my client, Jeff Schlitkin, $702,488. So that's part of the profit and loss statement, the thing that we've been talking about. The lower trial judge, there were all kinds of title errors, exaggerations, and I want to go to just one, back to what Judge Fox talked about in the first question to Mr. Epstein. That was the, is there evidence in the record of the $284,000? There is. There's specifically, Sonia Rodriguez talks about, Sonia Rodriguez explained in the case, and this is volume 2, pages 259 to 260, and I have it right here. I asked the question. Now, the next question I have, this is to to Sonia Rodriguez, the accountant, has to do with the composition of the $393,000, and excuse me, I think this was Mr. Beatty asking his own accountant, for closing costs. Can you explain that and what it's composed of? She answers on line 20, this is page 259 of the trial transcript, volume 2. There were two closings on that date. There was a 20% developer fee to Jeff Schlitkin for $142,480.70 and a 4% consulting fee. And then she goes on to talk about another 20% development fee, and that adds the $289,000. The reason that's important is that number was subtracted by the accountant when she prepared this profit and loss agreement. So it was a 20% profit distribution to Jeff Schlitkin, but it was subtracted out from the profit and loss agreement. He wants to eliminate that number. It is, again, I think, not wanting to confuse you. I think thinking about the numbers and the mathematics, we're not talking about mathematical error here. We're looking at what was Jeff Schlitkin supposed to get as part of his development and his profit share in this entire Red Tail development. Originally, and there was trial testimony about him expecting to be a partner, right at the formation and right at the very end, and the reason that the DMA was not drafted very artfully was because at the closing there, they said, you're not going to be a partner.
I get that, counsel. I want to go back to the point that you were just making because I think I might have missed something. Were you saying, I'm not sure what if this is what you were saying, the $284,000 that we were talking about earlier that your opponent says needs to be deducted from the damages, yes. Is that what you're now referring to and saying it already had come out?
It had come out, according to Sonia Rodriguez from a defense counsel's own questioning of her.
All right, well, so what do we make whoever it was, counsel's statement at trial that it needs to come out still in closing argument?
Well,
it's been posited by those of you, I was assuming, and your opponent is saying that's a judicial admission.
Let me explain that.
Did you make the statement, first of all?
Yes, I did. And what I was answering to was the judge asking me a question. Well, how about this $284,000? I think it was a discussion I was having with on closing argument. I was stating that, and I was stating it in closing argument to the judge, saying that the $284,000, if in fact it had not been subtracted, because at that time I didn't realize the import of Sonia Rodriguez's testimony that the $284,000 came out of this closing cost of $393,704.20, which is the first line item on the cost of sales of plaintiff's exhibit number 6. So
how do we now know that that's true, that the $284,000 is in the 300 something that Ms. Rodriguez
that I quoted on the trial transcript,
pages 259 to 60.
And okay. It goes into the next number, and those two add up to, I think, $289,000 is the...
How do we know that the $284,000 is not a different commission than $289,000? Because $289,000 is a little bit off from $284,000.
Well, you might not, without reading all of the information, all the evidence. It was clear that the $289,000 that they're talking about has to do with the last two closings, and that's very clear in the record relative to the trials. So I think this $284,000 is a good example of saying, well, mathematically, this was prepared by Red Tail, and Mr. Schlitkin had to say, well, is this what I'm entitled to? And Mr. Myers, and through Redtail, says you're entitled to $702,488 as of 2009. But then when we started requesting money or requesting the net profits, he then took the position, you're not entitled to anything.
Well, I'm sorry to ask you this question, counsel, but judicial admissions are binding on parties, and why isn't this one binding on your client?
The $284,000?
Yes, the statement that you made in closing argument.
The statement?
You're saying it was erroneous, but why isn't it binding nevertheless?
I think it was subtracted by the judge. I think the judge took it into consideration, Your Honor, because I asked the court to give $1.4 million for the losses suffered by Jeff Schlitkin at the trial. And I think the judge took into consideration, as the trier of fact, all of the evidence.
So where can we see from his calculation that he took off the $284,000?
You can see on the third page, on the last page of his order, that he, I think there's 147, which is just half of that 284. So the one
he only took off half of the 284.
I think he took off only half.
Do we know why he would take off only half?
I mean
that's part of my problem, is that the trial court's findings are
the
not very clear.
The 147, I can't answer. I think what I'm trying to show is the 80-20, you know, if you have any questions about the 80-20 split, the contract interpretation, about the loss, those are big items. The smaller items, the small subtractions, the half of the $284,000, that's really a fairly small item considering the rest of the stuff that he's trying to say didn't make sense. The two.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, counsel, but I don't consider it a small item. I'm trying to figure out where the money is.
No, I don't mean that it's small.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, he was entitled to 20% of the entire project for the net profits of Redtail, and he didn't get it, Your Honor. And I asked for 1.4, and he and the judge listened to all the evidence. I think he took into everything, but I can't. There isn't real specific.
Well, counsel, your opponent here is remand. All right, you want to avoid reversal and remand. So help me understand why you win and not your opponent remand.
I believe the court, Your Honor, took into account and calculated correctly the 20% based on the stipulated amount in the joint trial management order that it was net profits. And in fact, the stipulation is not as addressed in the appellant's briefs. Net profit, it is net profits collected. And so the stipulation, as you said, stipulations, be careful with stipulations. The stipulation that he entered into was the net profit, and that's what Exhibit 6 says. That is the number. And the judge, in awarding the net profit, added, I think, only the $196,000 of Colorado real estate taxes to the number that was stipulated to in the joint trial management order. Those two numbers comport with what the judge found as the amount of net profits that Mr. Schlitkin was entitled to. So, I have a few more minutes. Let me see what else I've forgotten. I think there was considerable amount of evidence supporting the court's interpretation of the development marketing agreement. The exhibits, and looking at the exhibits, there were questions constantly from Mr. Schlitkin to Redtail to please explain these things or please give me an accounting. The exhibits, the trial testimony, and then the court considered the credibility of the parties and in finding, I think, much more so than just a preponderance of the evidence, that the development and marketing agreement should be interpreted the way the court did interpret it. I do believe that the court calculated correctly the amount of numbers. And I think exhibit number six is the profit and loss sharing thing. I think that exhibit's very important. Exhibit number 10, is my request for damages of, I said 1.4, it's actually $1.374 million that I asked the judge to find. And the reason that I think that the argument really fails on this unrealized gains argument that appellant's counsel has made in his opening and his reply brief is, if you look at exhibit number 11, those are all the income taxes. that were paid by Redtail. And if you look at the 2004 income tax, Redtail reported an ordinary income report in the amount of $605,361. In 2006, Redtail reported $2.174 million. So those monies were distributed to Redtail, but never distributed to Slitkin. And in the trial transcripts, he didn't think that he had to distribute to Slitkin until the end of the agreement, until the end of the deal, and he didn't want to follow para pursue. He didn't want to follow the language in the contract. And I think when you look at the trial transcripts, it's clear in just the question, even from a cold reading of the trial, that he didn't treat him fairly. He didn't give him the information he needed in order to make a considered decision. And in fact, he every interpretation under the contract is to benefit Redtail Ranches. Are there any other questions? I've got just 20 seconds. Thank you very much.
Time for both sides has expired. Thank you both, counsel, for your arguments. The case will stand submitted and an opinion will issue in due course.